Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we talk about how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
We also talk about how a plant-based diet is the healthiest thing humans can do, as well as the best thing for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, if you're concerned about your health, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas.
On today's show, we'll have a conversation with Jim Hicks, author, blogger, consultant, and international activist and speaker. That's coming up a little later, but first some news.
Sea Shepherd Conservation Society reports that ghost nets have been retrieved from the Upper Gulf of California Reserve to save the vaquita, a highly endangered marine mammal endemic to the Sea of Cortez. Abandoned or lost fishing nets, also known as ghost nets, are a threat to the vaquita, other endangered species, the ecosystem's health, and even navigation of the area. During 21 days of search operations covering nearly 12,000 kilometers between October 10th and December 7th, a total of 136 abandoned fishing gear was localized, of which 103 were retrieved. 36 illegal gill nets for the endangered fish, the totoaba, 36 illegal gill nets for shrimp, 24 long lines to capture totoaba, sharks, and other fish, and 7 trawl nets and 2 traps. 2 live marine turtles, hundreds of fish and crustaceans were released. Also, 3 marine turtles raised and more than 1,000 different fish species and a non-identified marine mammal were found dead. The Ghost Net Retrieval Program has the participation of local fishermen, the local and federal governmental agencies in Mexico, Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, and the Museum de Ballena. Ghost nets are fishing gear abandoned or lost at sea, which may remain adrift for months or years, continuously catching and killing millions of fish, crabs, lobsters, turtles, birds, and marine mammals all over the world. Ghost nets affect marine ecosystems and impact the sea bottom, and as I said earlier, they also represent a threat to navigation. In addition, if these nets are not retrieved, the chemicals used for their manufacture are incorporated into the marine food web through their ingestion by marine invertebrates, fish, and other species, many with commercial value, affecting not only the ecosystem, but the humans who consume marine products. According to the United Nations, 640,000 tons of ghost nets are currently floating in the oceans, representing almost 10% of all marine litter. Several UN General Assembly resolutions mandate nations to address this issue through specific actions. Let's hope they take those actions soon for the sake of the vaquita and all the endangered and non-endangered species they threaten.
Last month, acting after pressure from the dairy industry, a group of 32 members of Congress, many of them from big milk-producing states, wrote a letter to the Food and Drug Administration, calling on the FDA to order manufacturers of plant-based drinks to find some other name, to stop using the terms soy milk, almond milk, rice milk, because milk comes from a cow, and consumers were being confused by the makers of plant-based drinks calling their products milk. I've been drinking plant milks for many years, and I've never been confused and thought that almond milk came from cows who ate a diet of almonds. This move by the dairy industry is not really about protecting consumers from confusion. It's because over the last couple of decades, sales of dairy products have plummeted, while sales of dairy alternatives, such as almond milk and soy milk, have soared. The dairy industry has been in a long-running battle with the makers of plant milks over the milk label. In the year 2000 and again in 2010, the National Milk Producers Federation filed formal complaints with the FDA, asking the agency to crack down on the labeling of plant-based drinks as milk. In 1997, the Soy Foods Association of America had asked the FDA to recognize that soy milk is the common and accepted name for a product derived from soybeans, and the term soy milk has been used for over a century. The FDA did not make a decision in those cases, and there's little sign that the letter instigated by the dairy industry and sent by those 32 congressmen will change things. Consumers have stopped swallowing the lies from the dairy industry about how cruel it is to cows and how it's cheated customers. A class action lawsuit was recently settled, with the dairy industry paying consumers $52 million for a scheme that killed 500,000 young cows to illegally inflate milk prices. With sales slumping and studies showing that each generation drinks less milk than the one before it, the dairy industry has literally dumped millions of gallons of overproduced milk down the drain to keep prices up. Last fall, the USDA stepped in to buy $20 million worth of cheese to reduce a glut caused by the lack of demand. The dairy industry's response to this price support was that it was not enough. If the dairy industry is truly worried about consumers being confused by the use of the word milk on plant-based drinks, then perhaps the dairy industry should begin labeling their products as cow milk and cow cheese. And if dairy farmers switch to producing plant crops instead of losing their livelihoods on a failing industry, they could find a more stable and reliable income. Milk, it does nobody good. Last week, it was announced by Ringling Brothers that they'll be closing the doors of that circus after 146 years. They cited increased cost of railroad transportation and the decision to stop using elephants in acts, which was brought about by pressure by animal rights groups. We're all very happy with this latest development. Our guest on today's show is Jim Hicks, author of the book Healthy Eating, Healthy World, and the book Four Leaf Guide to Vibrant Health. Jim holds a certificate in plant-based nutrition from the T. Colin Campbell Center for Nutrition Studies, where he has also been a member of the board of directors since 2012. Jim writes a weekly column on thefoodchannel.com, and he is a featured blogger on vegsource.com. Stay with us. Our conversation with Jim Hicks is next on ACT Radio. Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Jim Hicks. Thanks for being with us, Jim.
Thank you, Greg. Good to be here.
Jim, can we start out by having you tell our listeners about your journey toward veganism? Because it's quite an unusual story that we don't hear often here on ACT Radio.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. First of all, I don't call it a journey toward veganism because I don't use that word. I sometimes use that word to provide some clarity to the chef, so that when they're preparing my meal, they know that I don't want any animal products in it. But actually, I got curious about the optimal diet for humans back in 2002, and that's a long story about why I got curious, and I won't take the time to tell you that. But I will tell you that I just started researching on my own on the Internet, and, you know, I didn't have any particular problems. I wasn't overweight. I wasn't on any meds. I didn't feel bad. I was a pretty active person. I just got curious about what we really should be eating from a health standpoint. But then a few weeks, I had read several books and decided that was beginning to conclude that it looked like to me the optimal diet for humans was a whole food plant-based diet, at least trying to get as many calories of your daily calories per day as possible from those kinds of food. But then it was a few months later, on Memorial Day of 2003, I read two more books that focused primarily on the environmental impact of what we're eating. And one was Mad Cowboy by Howard Lyman.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard of that one.
We've had Howard on the show. Yeah.
And the other was Diet for a New America by John Robbins.
Sure.
And I've since met those gentlemen as well as all of the other doctors in this field. But over that weekend, they focus much of their books about the environmental impact of what we're eating. And it was at that moment, I think, over that weekend, that I had what I later referred to as my blinding flash of the obvious, and that is that we're eating the wrong food. And that kind of got me on a journey that got me to studying more about how we feed everybody in the world, our global feeding model, if you will. And I discovered a lot of opportunities and problems along the way, and so that's how it all got started.
Well, why do you avoid the word vegan? Do you use plant-based or some other term?
Well, the stats seem to show that about 95% of the people in the United States don't wish to be vegans or vegetarians, and I felt like that I would like to focus more on the positive aspects of eating this kind of diet. And so instead of focusing on what we're avoiding, if you ask a vegetarian what they eat, they'll start out by telling you what they don't eat. And so I said, why don't I come up with a scale? So I came up with the four-leaf scale, which basically you get more leaves if you're getting more calories from whole plants. It's based on maximizing the percentage of calories from whole plants, and the four-leaf level is reached at 80% of calories. So I ran that definition by my friend and colleague, Dr. T. Colin Campbell, at his breakfast table back in 2011, I think it was, or no, before that, 2009. And he said, you know, I really like this because it focuses on the positive. If you maximize your calories from whole plant-based foods, you'll automatically be reducing all of the other foods. And one can be very healthy eating a little bit of animal food, but vegetarian can also be very unhealthy by eating virtually no whole plant food. So I wanted to create a system that would be attractive to everybody and not turn off some 80 to 90% of the population just because of the terminology. And to be clear, I am not turned off by the terms vegan or vegetarian. I just want to reach a bigger audience.
Oh, okay.
And so that led you to write a book called The Four-Leaf Guide to Vibrant Health with Carrie Graff, who's an MD. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how that book came about?
Yeah, there was one book before that. I'll bring a few copies with me when I come to Texas next month. My first book was published in 2011. It's called Healthy Eating, Healthy World. And it basically is a compilation of everything I had learned about what we should be eating. And I cover all of the doctors, you know, Furman, McDougall, Esselstyn, all of those people who are now my friends and colleagues. And the book did really well. The number one contributor to the book was the science from Dr. T. Colin Campbell. And the book did well. It was, I had a publisher. And a few years later, I got a message from Dr. Carrie Graff, who had found me online. I had set up a website at fourleafprogram.com. I had my four-leaf survey on there. And Dr. Graff told me in the message that she had gone to see Forks Over Knives. And after practicing medicine for 20 years, she realized that most everything she had done was wrong. And she was looking on the internet for tools to help her convey her new knowledge to her patients. And she found me, and she found the four-leaf survey, and so she called to ask permission to use it in her practice because she noticed that it was a trademarked piece of intellectual property. And so I said, by all means, I said, that's why it's out there. And so that's how our relationship got started. And later that same year, that was in 2014 that we met, later that year we decided to write a book. Up until that point, people were constantly asking me, when are you going to write another book? And I said, when I have something else to say. And by teaming up with her, it added so much to the word of a layman like myself, who was educated as an industrial engineer and have been a business executive, but really there's nothing in my educational background other than my self-education that conveys that I know anything about health or the environment for that matter. So I was real happy with that book. We wrote it for her patients, basically. We have 37 chapters. They average less than 4 pages each. So if you sit down and read it just straight through, you can read those 37 chapters in about 2 hours. You can read then the appendix and a few other things in another hour. But it's a really good guide for someone that's just beginning to go down this path. And by having it be chapters less than 4 minutes, you can pick it up and read it, read about losing weight, read about shopping for groceries, read about the environment and things like that. So I'm real happy with that book.
And you can also take the four-leaf quiz to see where your current diet sits on the scale that you guys have developed.
Yes, and she, Dr. Graff, in some of the chapters she wrote in the book, talks about the progress of two or three of her patients, and she talks about how they came into the office, and it's actually very cool to be able to follow the progress of the patients. And they take the survey, and then she reviews the survey when they come in on their next visits, and so with the survey, they can see exactly where they gained or lost points. And as she finds, using the paper version of the survey, they circle their answers. She reviews it with them, and they both can see where they lost points or gained points, and it really helps engage the patient in the process of, okay, I've got a job here to take charge of my health. That's how that works.
When you're here in February as guest speaker for the Vegetarian Society of El Paso, perhaps we can get some of the attendees at that dinner interested in taking the survey.
Yeah, well, you can interest them before I get there, if you like, and just tell them to go to fourleafsurvey.com.
Okay.
Directly to that website, and that is nothing but the survey. You can take it online in 2 minutes. You can get your score and a little summary of that level. It'll put you in one of 6 levels, from standard American diet all the way up to the 4-leaf level. And working on with a software developer right now, there's one aspect of that that's not working properly, but it will compute your score and assign your level.
And the questions are quite simple. I took the quiz myself this morning, and it's just basically, how often do you eat fresh fruits and veggies, grains? Where do
Right.
you get your omega-3s? And then how much meat and dairy you consume. One thing that I thought was interesting, too, is that you can see the influence of the Esselstyn diet and Dr. T. Colin Campbell, because of the questions about including oil and sugar in the diet as well. And that, you know, like you said in your opening comments, a lot of vegetarians and vegans can actually be unhealthy if they're eating too much processed food or foods high in fats and sugar.
Oh, how did you score on it?
Oh, I got a 6. Because of the sugar.
Oh.
Yeah, because, you know.
That's actually, anything above 0 is a pretty decent score. It's a lot better than the average American's getting, so.
Yeah, I think, because I was truthful about my commitment to reduce sugar intake in my diet. Unfortunately, I have a bad sweet tooth. I need to work on that. We all have areas we need to work on, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, that survey's been given over 100,000 times. And I've gotten mostly positive feedback. Occasionally, about the only complaint I get is from very healthy eaters who know they're eating a really good diet, and they get a score of 3-leaf instead of 4-leaf. And they sometimes send me a snippy little note about that. It got me to thinking, well, they have a point. And so, but I have to remind myself and everyone that what we're really looking for is to identify the people that need help. And those are the people that score below 0. And that's the lowest 2 levels of the 6 levels. And we estimate that those people are getting at most 10% or between 0 and 20% of their calories from whole plants. And most of them get far less than 10. Whereas if you're scoring 20 points plus 20, that's the beginning of the 3-leaf level. Mm-hmm. 3 and 4, I consider both a superior diet, because it starts at 60% of your calories from whole plants. The average American gets closer to 5%.
Wow.
Well,
so the survey does a good job of identifying who needs help and who's already eating a superior diet. And just so you know, that the total percentage of people that score at 3 and 4 leaf, just the people you will meet in the grocery store. I'm not talking about your friends at the vegetarian club. But people you meet in the grocery store, only 3% of them are going to score at the 3-leaf higher, 3-leaf level or better.
Most people
It's pretty rare. Mm-hmm. You know that from just looking at menus everywhere you eat, the choices you have.
Yeah, and most people are loading up on meat and dairy and not wanting to eat carbs. So,
and the most often consumed vegetable in the United States is the French fried potato. And
yeah, with 40% of its calorie from the oil.
Yeah. And the only other vegetables they get is the lettuce leaf and tomato slice on their burger.
And with a lot of oil, olive oil and mayonnaise on there with it. So
yeah.
You're right.
Well, when you changed your diet, did you see any, dramatic impacts on your, you said you're already pretty healthy, and so I'm just wondering, could you sense any changes in your health after switching to a more plant-based diet?
Yeah, I was just reviewing a chapter this morning in our book. It's chapter 23 in our book. It's called Evidence of Detox. And I won't get into the gory details here, but I noticed some things happening in my body that surprised me and pleased me at the same time, not to mention the fact that I lost 20 pounds I didn't think I had to lose. But I was a healthy, you know, fairly young guy. I was 58, I think, and I was a runner, so I exercised a lot and looked okay. When I really started eating a near-perfect diet, near-ideal diet, you know, a lot of things happened in my body that made me glad that I'd made that decision. One thing I was planning to do during my study was to have some colonic therapy, colonic irrigation, because I'd been reading about that. You know, if you ate the standard American diet for most of your life, you've got all this impacted stuff in your colon.
I thought you weren't going to get gross, Jim.
Well, I'm not going to get gross, but I actually made an appointment to get one of those done. But then I noticed that my body was taking care of business, and I never did have that done. And I know now that, you know, there's businesses set up that do that. That's all they do. Well, but their customers are people that are eating a crappy diet.
Yeah.
They come once a month to get cleaned out. But if you're eating the ideal diet, you don't need to do that.
Yeah,
sorry about that, Greg.
Oh, that's all right.
Well, there are some other health benefits listed in the chapter, like clearer complexion, better facial color. Let's see what else. Improved sleep and better energy. And that's an important one for everyone in our very hectic society. I know that, you know, how important sleep is to mental and physical health. So those are all other really good benefits that you can derive.
Also, I've been getting great sleep since I retired. I suggest everyone retire immediately.
That's good. Yeah.
You know, your other book, Healthy Eating, Healthy World, focuses heavily on sustainability. And I know Liz and I are both concerned about the environmental reasons for a plant-based diet. Are you hopeful that we'll recognize the problems and change the world in before it's too late?
Of course, I'm hopeful. I'm constantly running into challenges in getting the ear of the people, the highly influential people that are needed to make this all happen. But to quote one of my new factoids that I learned from the Global Footprint Network organization, relative to the carrying capacity of planet Earth, of course, it depends on, in terms of humans, it depends on how we're living, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they computed that the carrying capacity, if everyone lived like an average European, the Earth can only sustain indefinitely 2 billion people. And it gets worse. If everybody lives, works, plays, and travels, and eats like we do in the USA, the planet can only sustain 1 billion people. Now, that's pretty scary when you think about the fact we've got 7.5 billion here now. At least 2 billion are eating away, close to the way we or Europeans eat. And we're adding 220,000 people every day. So we've got a very serious sustainability problem. And, you know, the people meet in Paris and various cities, and they talk about what we're doing about climate change. Well, it's way too little too late. None of this is going to be sustainable if we don't address the food and address it in an urgent manner in the fairly near future. And that's what I talk about a lot in my work, whether it's on my blog or in my speeches or shows like this one.
And we hope you'll talk about that more next month when you're our guests at the Vegetarian Society of El Paso.
I certainly will.
Yeah, great.
It seems like you did a lot of research for that book. I was looking, I guess I was reading your bio online, and you said you spent about 10,000 hours just reading and learning, and that must have been a really productive and wonderful time of your life to get to be able to spend that much time immersing yourself in something so important.
Yeah, I sacrificed the living I was making at the time. But I forget the name of the person that wrote the book about it takes 10,000 hours of study in a new area to become an expert. So I have no degree in nutrition. I did get a certificate from the T. Colin Campbell plant-based nutrition course. And I'm also on the board of the T. Colin Campbell Center for Nutrition Studies. But I have no educational credentials other than my own study. But I have published over 1,000 articles on my blog
now.
Yeah, well, tell our listeners where they can go to see your blog.
Okay. Real simple, five letters, hpjmh.com.
We've been talking with Jim Hicks, author of the book Healthy Eating, Healthy World, and the book The Four-Leaf Guide to Vibrant Health. We appreciate you being with us on the show, and we look forward to your visit to El Paso next month, Jim.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to the trip.
Thanks, Jim. It's great talking with you. If you'd like to purchase one of Jim's books, you can do it at Amazon or any of the other online book vendors, or you could get yourself a copy at our upcoming dinner with Jim.
That dinner, the Vegetarian Society of El Paso's winter dinner, will take place on Saturday, February 25th at 6 o'clock at the Country Inn and Suites on Sunland Park Road. To make reservations or learn more about this dinner, please go to the website of the Vegetarian Society at vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACT Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the listen button.
Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.